Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your continuing commitment to give common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. If you've not become an Undivided subscriber already, but you enjoy the podcast, have maybe enjoyed the podcast for a few months now, consider becoming a subscriber to help support the show and our mission. And you get a bonus episode every single Wednesday, so we just get to hang out more. It's really just a good deal. You can do that at patreon.com/undivided or by becoming a contributor on my locals community, brandicruz.locals.com. I'm on like low sleep today, but I had a lot of fun last night. I went to Kitsap County to be on the Outlaw Radio Network. It's a show that airs in Kitsap County, but they simulcast on an Atlanta station on Sundays. We had a good time. Here's a picture of me and the gang. And I loved the conversation in the show because they have so many voices and they don't all agree politically. Imagine that. And we just had a really good time. We talked for 3 hours about everything from, you know, me leaving mainstream news to the local political races, the national political races, what's going to happen with Trump. We'll get to more of that in a moment. And I also, they liquored me up a little bit before we went on. I got this. This is not an ad. But this is the best thing I've ever drank with booze in it. So one of the hosts has this distillery, Black Ring Spirits, out of Port Orchard, Washington. And they actually have a tasting room that's downstairs from their pod or their radio studio. And this is, oh my gosh, it's this toasted coffee-flavored whiskey. Oh my gosh, it was so good. I had a little sampling of it before we got started. Let me tell you, this, I'm just trying to do you a favor here. It's been a long election cycle. Again, this is not an ad. It's just delicious. You know, as it gets colder, maybe some ice cream, a little caramel, just a splash, just a little splash of this bad boy. Here it is. Oh yeah. This is going to be on the holiday list for sure. Some apple pie and a little glass of that. Nice. Tomorrow is apparently supposed to be a big day. We're going to talk about a few things today. First of all, you'll notice, especially if you watch the video podcast, some changes coming over the next few episodes. We've completely revamped the studio to allow for more in-person interviews, which I think is really fundamental to doing good in-depth interviews. I'm so tired of Zoom. I mean, it's a great tool if you can't get two people together. But we really want to, one, we're working towards our goal of doing this show every day and doing it live. So we're slowly working towards that. This is a big step in that direction. As I said on my newsletter on Sunday, big thanks to my friend Daryl for coming in and just using the skills he learned in the Navy to completely revamp our setup here. So coming up, our first in-studio interview that we taped was with Julie Anderson, the candidate for Secretary of State who ran as a nonpartisan and lost. She and I had an in-depth conversation, I think a very interesting conversation about what it was like to run as a nonpartisan, to have the Democratic Party in particular attack her with such vigor, and some of the changes that she'd like to see to the way that we do elections when it comes to the Secretary of State races in particular, or the auditor races, when it comes to electing people who run our election system. I thought it was a fascinating conversation, so we're going to hear a little bit of that coming up. We'll also hear from John Scholes. He's the president and CEO of the Downtown Seattle Association. They did this audit of sorts of just how out of control Seattle's tax problem has gotten. And I think I suspected some of this, but to see it in black and white is much different. And so we're going to talk to him about that momentarily. I just want to, I would be remiss if we didn't address the Donald Trump announcement coming tomorrow. There has been some speculation as to what exactly this announcement, he calls it a special announcement. And he's been teasing this for a while. You know, I guess I expect that he's going to kick off a 2024 presidential run. I know there are some folks who have said, oh, no, Tuesday didn't go well, generally speaking, and so he wouldn't do it then. I've also heard a crazy conspiracy that I don't know if there's any credence to it, that he is going to announce that his son, Don Trump Jr., is going to run for president. I don't see that. I don't know. It seems like he's been laying the groundwork to run again. So apparently there's this event. It's scheduled for 9 p.m. local time. So that's 6 p.m. Pacific time. And we'll see what he does. I mean, either way, we knew that the 2024 presidential campaign cycle was going to start soon. And Joe Biden has said that he's going to make, you know, his sort of official decision about 2024 early next year. And so I think once you get Trump, you know, campaigning, if that's what he's going to end up doing, then soon you're going to need Joe Biden to make a decision. I mean, he said he's going to run. He's not going to run. You're going to need him to make that public, because until he makes it official, then other candidates aren't going to step up and run on the Democratic side. And then we launch into this 2-year-long drama, which I'm really not excited for, but it is my job. So I am going to make an effort at doing my job. But I also just generally, for the Republican Party, I made it clear I don't think that continuing on the Trump path is going to be particularly productive. I think DeSantis is a much better bet at this time for the Republican Party. And I have my qualms with DeSantis as well. I think he can be a little bit politically petty. But, you know, I think that he's a much, if you just look at his performance on Tuesday, much better bet than Trump. So we'll see what happens. And then you're going to have people who start to pick sides. Are they going to side with Trump, endorse Trump? Are they going to endorse DeSantis? And what's going to happen from there? So we'll see. I think this is really going to determine the direction and the future of the Republican Party. Do they kind of coalesce behind Trump, or wait and kind of get the official word from Ron DeSantis? So we shall see. I'm interested in hearing from you guys on that. Do you think you want to stay with Trump if you're on the Republican side? Do you want to go with Ron DeSantis? Do you want to go with someone else? And also, if you're a Democrat watching, I'm very curious if you would like to see Trump, if you think he's easier to beat, or if you have a particular opinion on the matter. And if, for that matter, if you want to see President Joe Biden run again, or if you think that's even in the realm of conversation. A race we've been watching very closely on the show was the race for Secretary of State in Washington. It was fascinating because we had a Republican Secretary of State for a long time, and then she won and left to take a job in the Biden administration. So Governor Jay Inslee took it as an opportunity to appoint a Democrat to the seat. Democrats have wanted the Secretary of State's office for years and years and years. And so this was a pretty easy way for them to get it, kind of by default. And then, you know, a campaign happened and Republicans ran, you know, a handful of candidates. And then a nonpartisan entered the race, Julie Anderson, who has been the auditor in Pierce County, Washington. And so you kind of had this perfect storm or imperfect storm, depending on what side you're on, where Republicans split up all their votes. And so you had Steve Hobbs, the Democrat, and Julie Anderson, the nonpartisan, even though she's a progressive woman, but she ran as a nonpartisan. We'll get to more of that in a moment. It advanced to the general election. And then you had another odd wrinkle where a Republican mounted a write-in campaign and was able to get more than 100,000 votes. And so ultimately, I think a lot of those votes would have otherwise gone to Julie Anderson. And Julie Anderson ended up losing by fewer than 100,000 votes. I invited her in to the studio to talk about running a campaign as a nonpartisan, but also to talk to her about really some of the, I would consider my characterization, vicious and dishonest tactics that the Democratic Party used against her. So how are you just generally feeling a couple days after the election?
Feeling good, feeling proud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to win pre-primary. I know I expressed that sentiment to you. When Brad Klippert mounted a write-in campaign, did you kind of know this is going to be a problem?
No.
Really?
No. I didn't know what kind of traction his write-in campaign would have, and I didn't know, frankly, what my win margin was going to be. So, no. And there wasn't anything to be done about it, so worrying about it, mounting some sort of counter strategy didn't make sense. So no, I wasn't concerned about it.
But when you
It was just a thing among many things that happened in the campaign.
It was a stupid thing. That's my opinion. I don't think, and I expressed that, and I exchanged voicemails with Brad Klippert just because I.
Because you were about to call him a stupid thing?
Well, no, it was after the fact. But, you know, when you look at the vote total, though,
yeah,
the number of votes that I'm assuming he got, we don't see who the write-in votes were for, but the number of votes of more than 100,000, it's more than your deficit. Do you believe it cost you the election?
I think it contributed to the loss, but I'm not centering it on there. I think Brad's platform, as you know, was let's get rid of vote by mail. Let's have one day in person only voting and make Election Day a holiday and a couple of other things sprinkled in there. Folks that were attracted to that platform were not my voters to begin with. Mm-hmm. So, but let's say that half of the people that cast a ballot for him were just responding to as long as they've got an R next to their name.
Right.
Those are the votes that really cost me, I think.
Well, I mean, I tend to think that anyone who wrote in Brad Clifford's name, if he had not been on there, I think most of those would have gone to you. Because, again, it's just then they're looking at a D and saying, well, I don't want to vote for the Democrat. Because it's a lot of effort to write someone's name in. And 100,000, that's not so bad to get 100,000 people to write your name in. As far as Steve Hobb, let's just put that out there. The first time we sat down, I think you said to me, I just hope he doesn't, like, screw things up too bad in the meantime. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah.
Do you still hold that sentiment about Steve Hobbs?
I have not gained any respect for him. I support the outcome of the election. I respect the voters that cast their ballot for him. I don't think that the office is going to reach its full potential under his administration. And my opinion of his administrative chops has not changed. But we're going to be okay.
When you say you haven't gained any respect for him, is that just as an elections administrator or as a person?
As an election administrator, we don't have a personal relationship, so yeah.
A couple days after, I think it was a couple days after ballots dropped, Governor Jay Inslee and Tina Politowski put out this video. You've seen it, obviously.
Yeah, some folks sent me a screenshot.
So we want to repeat, whatever you do, do not write in Brad Clifford.
The most transparent attempt at reverse psychology.
It was pretty funny. It was humorous.
Do not write in Brad Clifford. They could have almost spelled it like that's BRADKLIPPERT. Do not write that in.
Yeah.
And to anyone, I think, politically inclined, it was so obvious what they were doing. So when
I'm sure that there was a shiver of joy as soon as Brad Clifford mounted his write-in campaign, because it would only help Mr. Hobbs.
Well, right. It was their lifeline. But what's your reaction to just that video and the transparent gaslighting of it?
Amusement. This is a political campaign. Mm-hmm. And so that was a political strategy. There wasn't anything unethical about it. It was just the silliness of politics.
I disagree about the unethical part. I think I have a much broader definition of unethical.
Oh, but say more about that.
Well, I think that, one, it's treating voters like they're stupid. I think what that showed me is two people, one the highest elected official in the state and one the head of a major political party, treating Republican voters like they're stupid and saying, like, we think you're so dumb that you're going to believe this little shtick that we're putting on. So I was actually, in addition to being amused by it, I was offended by it.
Oh, yeah. Well, it was a little buffoonish, but 100%. It was a campaign tactic, and there you go.
So speaking of campaign tactics, I want to set the record straight on something. And I was very clear that I told listeners I was voting for you. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It doesn't amount to an endorsement, but it was obvious that I was voting for you. And I had written an op-ed about it as well that the Seattle Times didn't take, by the way. Usually they take my op-eds. They didn't take that one, which I was like, because I think they endorsed Steve Hobbs, right?
They did.
Yeah, interesting. You know, part of it is I've been very clear that the two-party system, I believe, is failing Americans. And I think it takes a lot of guts to say, I'm going to run outside that structure. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to have this party system backing me. And that's a big deal because the infrastructure that a party brings with them, as you know,
is tremendous,
is significant. So I had a lot of respect for you for doing that. And it's why we were so interested in your campaign from the very beginning. But also, you're just the most qualified person for the job. And so hands down, I don't have anything against Steve Hobbs. He was a moderate Democrat. I think that he kept his own party in line sometimes, but he was plucked from the Senate because Jay Inslee didn't want him there. And so he wasn't qualified for the job. And so I think for me, that's sort of where I landed on things. There were a lot of Republicans who listened to the show and who told me that they didn't actually think you were nonpartisan, that they think 100% she's a Democrat and she's just running as a nonpartisan. Can you respond to that criticism? I mean, are you a Democrat in your personal life?
No, but here's what it, I have a life and I have opinions, and I never told people that I came as a blank slate that could be colored in. I have careers behind me. I've advanced ideas as an election administrator. When I'm running as a nonpartisan, what it means is I'm not going to accept money or endorsements from a political party. That what you see is what you get. And part of what you see is somebody that has progressive ideology and has advanced progressive platforms. But what you see is what you get. I'm not going to be steamrolled or bought or supported or sponsored by any group or entity. And will make decisions based on my professional experience, what's best for voters, what increases efficiency, transparency, and security.
Yeah, so while you have, you know, progressive ideals, your argument being, I'm still not bought and paid for. I don't have to answer to anyone.
And I won't be intimidated. I mean, isn't that the story of the last 4 or 5 years, is that part of the danger of having a two-party system, a duopoly, influencing, sponsoring, and underwriting these campaigns for Secretary of State, is that people that are secretaries are subjected to partisan pressure. One of my points in running as a nonpartisan is that we need some structural change in these positions, whether they're county elected officials or state election officials, to protect them from partisan influence, which, again, doesn't mean that you don't make decisions and have policy choices to make, but some insulation from bullying and that kind of influence.
Yeah, and I want to get to what you would like to see in our state's election system moving forward, changes you'd like to see, maybe talk about some of the national issues we had with voting and address those. But on the political kind of issue, is there... So Tina Pawlodowski, a couple days after they released the video, you know, the buffoonery, she, behind the scenes, I talked about this on the podcast, they started booking interviews with conservative radio hosts in town, Ari Hoffman, Jason Rands, Dory Monson, believing they could also pull one over on them by Tina Pawlodowski doing an interview to that audience and saying, oh, don't write in Brad Clifford. They were trying to spread the buffoonery in that video even further. And when that didn't work with any three of those gentlemen, she resorted to attacking you. And on the Dory Monson show in particular, she had some not so nice things to say about your record as the Pierce County auditor. And other Democrats came to your defense. There are some Democrats from Olympia who responded to the state party on Twitter who were not happy with her attacking you. Has your opinion of the Democratic Party changed as a result of what you saw over the past year?
I think that what we saw was that any political party has this capacity. I thought it was particularly ugly, but you know something? At the end of the day, at the end of this election, it provides me with proof points that support my argument that political parties have outsized influence and can be bullies, and that we need to protect election administrators at the county and the state level and insulate them and provide some structural change so that they're not affiliated with those parties. And I can tell you that it made me, people kept asking me in the campaign, how can you be so calm? Why are you, you know?
You are a very calm lady, generally.
I am. And what's up with that? Aren't you stressed out? Aren't you upset by this? And I kept thinking this is providing Exhibit A, Exhibit B, Exhibit C, for why I, as a candidate, didn't want to be affiliated with any political party, because I know that in a tight race, the worst behavior comes out, the most extreme. And I thought, what kind of Secretary of State who needs to be above the fray, the highest professional character, would want to be affiliated with a partner, with a fiscal sponsor that behaves that way?
Yeah, winning at any cost.
Yeah.
Has your opinion of the governor changed?
No.
What is your opinion of the governor? Julie, come on. What are, you can be honest here, safe space. What's your opinion of the governor?
I was disappointed in the way he managed this appointment process. And yeah, I'll leave it at that.
Have you ever spoken to him about it?
About in the aftermath of his decision?
Yeah.
We have no relationship. He doesn't even know who I am. Are you kidding me?
Yeah. What are your hopes for Steve Hobbs?
That he takes the job seriously and starts applying himself 110% to the office. My hope is also that he fills vacancies and that he reaches beyond a circle of friends and really looks to professionals. My hope for him is that he listens seriously to the 39 county election officials about what is needed. And then my hope for him is that he learns to love the job and that he has fun.
Yeah. You offered in your concession, I'm here to help you if you need it.
Yeah.
I think he'll take you up on that?
No.
I love you, Julie. You guys talk on the phone?
Yeah.
Did you speak and how'd that conversation go, if you're willing to share?
Oh, a little bit like an editorial board interview.
Brief.
Yeah.
Quickly, again, on the political front, I don't want to dwell on it, but for the Democrats who had your back during the nastiness, even the, you know, tried and true Democrats, what do you say to them?
Thank you, and you're going to be part of the future in helping to add some ballast to partisan politics. And I will tell you that every one of those people that stepped up didn't do it because I asked. They surprised the heck out of me. Not pleasantly surprised, because these are all people that have really high character, but so glad that they were able to do that, because I think they're going to improve the party in the end.
I do think it showed really high moral character to say, look, you're my party, but how you're treating her is absurd.
Yeah, and I think that there will be some fallout well beyond this campaign. It'll probably be behind the scenes, and that's not my story to tell, but there is a lot more that went on that the public did not see.
Well, I'll tell it, because I know a little bit of drama. I do know there are some Democrats who want to see Tina Pawlodowski go as the state party chair, specifically over her treatment of you during the campaign. Have you heard that?
That would not surprise me. Mm-hmm. And I would hate to say that it's treatment of me, because it's not about me, it's just behavior,
right?
Period and full stop. And I did say on the campaign trail that, you know, when the candidate for Secretary of State accepts $250,000 in cash from the political party, and then the leader of that political party uses disinformation, things that you know to be untrue, in order to win a campaign, then you have officially become part of the problem, not part of the solution, which again, just underscores why it's important to run as a nonpartisan, even though that means I've got progressive values, I've got a track record, but running independent of that and not benefiting from the things that hurt democracy is incredibly important.
That's well said. And if there's one office that should be the furthest away from the drama and the mess and the money of all that, it should be the person who runs elections
in
the state.
And I'm just, my worry is that this competitive campaign that got a little rough and saw some not good behavior, I'm afraid that it's going to discourage professionals behind me from stepping up and running. Some of the things that were actually true, there weren't many things that she said that were actually true, but several of them that were actually true were election errors that happened on my watch. And, you know, I defy anybody with 13 years of professional experience, having managed hundreds of elections, to have not presided over any mistake at all.
Right.
And I'm afraid that the professionals who are qualified for this position, who may have had a dream about leading the office will be discouraged and say, you know, something, I've got reality on my shirt sleeves. I guess I'm not qualified to run. And I'm going to do everything in my power over the next few years to encourage them. I'm going to keep up this argument about nonpartisanship for sure. And I am going to lobby for structural changes in the office.
Let's talk about that, because so you are not the Pierce County auditor anymore. Someone else ran for that position. Farmer, is that who won?
Linda Farmer is the incoming, the apparent winner for Pierce County.
And
auditor.
Do you like her? Is
yeah.
Good choice. Yeah. So what is next for you? Like, what are you going to do?
Something hard, I'm sure.
Yeah. Something hard and stressful.
Something hard. I haven't given a lot of thought into that, frankly. I really was pouring myself 100% into this race. It's going to be something that's challenging. And another thing, I mentioned that I was worried that professionals coming up behind me would be discouraged and feel like they couldn't run because they have a realistic professional track record. I was deeply touched on the campaign trail, meeting people in community. And I was, again, impressed by how this two-party system that has become more and more extreme, we're insulated somewhat in Washington State, but I feel that slipping away.
I do too.
That this two-party system throws so much human capacity away. The people that, the regular citizens that I met, whether they voted for me or not, really want unity. And they love their communities. They love this country. They love their communities. And throwing them away because they are not a D or an R is a complete just loss of human capacity. And everything that's right in our communities and right in our country. So whatever I do, one, it's going to be hard. Two, it's going to be nonpartisan. And three, it's going to be really getting to the center of what unites us as Washingtonians.
So if we were to try to make the Secretary of State's office, at least, a nonpartisan race, where you could not rely on having a little letter next to your name that would give you some artificial boost, how would we have to go about doing that in the state? Would that be through the legislature or a constitutional amendment?
It's extremely easy, and the bill has already been drafted, and it literally just strikes a few words and inserts others. So it is an RCW change. It requires that the state legislature take action. And making it a nonpartisan office doesn't fix it automatically. Mm-hmm. I'm not Pollyanna about this. I know that people with partisan histories and members of parties will still run and that the two political parties will still have outsized influence on the campaigns, right? But it signals to the public and it signals to both of the political parties that what is required is professionalism first and party second. And I think that that's just enough of a course correction that it will make a difference in who steps up as candidates and who the parties put forward as their candidates. That's my hope.
Well, I love that idea. And actually, I was just on a radio show last night down in Kitsap County. And one of the things I said is I would like it to be illegal to list political party on the ballot, period. For the governor's race, for Senate, for anything. One, to force voters to sort of look into these people. But it doesn't mean you can't campaign as a partisan and say, this is what I am.
Absolutely.
But I would love for the ballot to not list a political party.
Well,
is that even feasible?
Of course it's feasible.
Is it a bad idea? Is it a good idea?
Washingtonians aren't ready for it. I think that what they were ready for is that this particular office, Secretary of State, should be nonpartisan.
Yeah.
And that's always been my argument. Part of the irrational criticism that was thrown my way whenever I said I wanted to make the office and county election officials optionally nonpartisan is that it's throwing away any accountability, mm-hmm. that you're not accountable to a party platform. I don't think that that's true at all. And I think that voters have been electing local nonpartisan officials for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah, and politics still comes into it. Like, you know, sure. Like Ann Davison, she was elected as a city attorney in Seattle, but she had just run as a Republican for lieutenant governor. Yeah. So it's not as if people are blind to what their political leanings might be.
Right.
Will you run for this seat again?
I'm not going to say no,
okay.
That's not something that I'm planning on and positioning on. And I do want Mr. Hobbs to be successful. You know, I've said some unflattering things about him on the yeah. campaign trail and even in this show. But I do want him to be successful. And I don't want my work in advocacy, wherever that is, to be viewed as a mini campaign.
Or like retribution or, yeah.
Yeah, or 2024. I do want him to be successful.
And you noted something important there. He is only serving the remainder of Kim Wyman's term,
that's
correct?
Right.
So there will be another election.
In
2024. That's not even that far away.
And
so.
then Brandy, practically, one of the things that made this campaign possible was yeah. the fact that it was happening off cycle in 2022.
Yep.
If you think things are partisan now, mm-hmm. wait until we get right in the middle of that presidential election. And then I think it's not going to be possible for a nonpartisan to be competitive.
Well, and also, you relied on an open seat drawing a yeah. bunch of people running, and that's what Republicans did.
Yeah.
And that's one of the things that really pissed me off about the write-in campaign is, like, I felt like, hey, you didn't get it together pre-primary.
It felt a little like a sore loser.
And it was
kind
like,
thing,
oh,
yeah.
let's just toss this in there. And it's like, you know, I got some Republicans who were mad at me for that. Like, we deserve to have somebody who we believe in on the ballot. And I totally agree with that. Mm-hmm. I didn't tell anyone, don't write in Brad Klipper. But I made it clear that I didn't think it had a chance in hell of being successful.
Well, let me tell you, let's talk a little bit more about that, because people are also surprised that I'm not angry about the
write-in. Right.
First of all, I don't think that they all would have gone my way. And second of all, I think that it's, I think that the protest vote, mm-hmm. which is what this boiled down to,
right.
Is an essential part of Americanism. And ironically, I had a lot to do with the law being changed to make this write-in
okay, yeah.
possible, because I think access to the ballot is important.
Yeah.
And so I don't begrudge the Republican Party for getting behind the write-in campaign. They're in the business of electing their partisans, but this wasn't about getting a Republican elected because he didn't stand a chance, but it was a protest vote. And
right.
I think people have a right to do that. They can either do that by sitting out and not voting in the race at all. Who knows? Maybe we would have had a 4%, you know, more in undervotes if yeah. he hadn't been a write-in option.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Well, that's very big of you. I would be in here in your seat raging.
No,
yeah, I understand. And I agree. I always want people to have an option they like.
Because you're in the business of watching campaigns. I will yeah. say, though, that this is a sign of the future, and every single campaign that's partisan needs to be thinking ahead of time about what a spoiler vote like this looks like, because yeah. I think this is going to become more common. It didn't cost him anything to do this, mm-hmm. And it had, depending on who you ask, an impact on my race. So you need to build this into your projections, because write-in candidates, I think, are going to be appearing a lot.
You can watch the second half of my interview with Julie Anderson coming up Wednesday on the subscriber-only episode. We're going to dive into some of the issues with the Tuesday election, like what happened in Maricopa County, Arizona, and some of the changes that she would like to see to positions that run elections. And also we're going to talk about ranked choice voting a little bit more. It's an issue, I'll be honest, I don't think I fully understand or grasp. And so she's going to bear with me on that and talk to me a little bit about that issue. And we'll also talk more about what is in store for her following this campaign. So if you'd like to become a subscriber, you can watch that Wednesday episode, patreon.com/undivided, or you can become a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. The following segment is presented in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to realize that you have some liberal cities where taxes are simply out of control. And I don't know that there's a ton that can be done at this very second to fix the economy, but one thing that governments can look to is to give consumers a little bit of relief, you know, especially if you're in a good budgetary situation, to say, hey, let's reevaluate some of these taxes and see if we can cut back until the economy's better, at the very least. But there was this interesting assessment done in Seattle that shows, I think, what I expected, but it's different to see it in writing. The Downtown Seattle Association commissioned this review of the city's taxes, and it found a couple things. Since 2013, the city of Seattle's tax revenues have grown four times faster than Seattle's population. Okay, that's significant. Taxes collected have grown by 94%, while employment grew by 19% and population by 22%. And then after adjusting for inflation, per capita taxes have grown 34% over the past 10 years. And the city now collects $600 more in taxes per person than it did in 2013. And that is after adjusting for inflation. And joining us to offer an analysis of that tax study is John Scholes, president and CEO of the Downtown Seattle Association. John, thanks for joining us.
Great to be with you, Brandy.
So what was the genesis, I guess? What made you think, let's take a deep dive into the state of Seattle's taxes?
Well, we've heard for a bit now that, you know, the fiscal sky is falling in the city of Seattle, and we wanted to better understand the facts. And the facts over the last 10 years is that city taxpayers, voters, the business community have been contributing more and more each and every year to the city coffers. And we've had really record growth in the city's tax base over the last decade, growth of 94% of the city's general fund, which has far outpaced the growth of population and the growth of employment in the city. So we believe the city has the revenue to address and deal with the most pressing issues facing Seattle: safety, security, homelessness, and affordability. And we should be focused there, not on raising the next tax or raising additional taxes, which is where some want to take the conversation.
Well, and in that regard, and you and I have talked about this before, Seattleites have been very generous in passing taxes on themselves. But when you look at this analysis, is there anything to show for it?
I think that is driving some of the frustration that we see in our city right now among voters, because I think they recognize that over the last decade, they have been generous, you know, voting for a number of levies to make important investments. But we're just, I don't think, seeing the results that anybody really deserves and wants to see when it comes to those issues I noted earlier. So the spending's gone up, the trust among the public in city government has gone down. And I think this is an important moment for us civically to, you know, take stock of where we've been over the last decade, where voters are at, and to focus and to bear down on those issues that are of most concern to small businesses, arts and cultural communities, and residents across the city. There's shared agreement on what those issues are: homelessness, safety, security, and addressing affordability in our city. And instead of solely being focused on how do we raise the next tax or increase the ones we've got, let's focus on how we get results on those issues.
Now, you sent the results of this in a letter to city leaders. Have you heard anything back?
We've had some conversations with city leaders, and I would say I'm encouraged that it looks like the budget that they're developing now for next year, and the one certainly the mayor proposed, really is based on sort of the principles and some of the thinking that we were offering, you know, staying within existing resources, not raising new taxes, and focusing the investment in city dollars on safety, security, on police hiring, on addressing homelessness. So I commend both the council and certainly the mayor with the budget he proposed for the way in which they've been working over these last several weeks. And I hope that can continue. I think that that's where we need to be as a city. I have a little bit of concern over a new task force that's been created under the premise that we need more taxes. And they've been sort of sent off to go come back with a recommendation of what new tax or how much more tax dollars can we raise. And I think that's the wrong assignment. We should have a group of leaders and in particular, our elected leaders focused on how do we get more people off the street? How do we ensure safe neighborhoods? How do we reduce gun violence? Those are the questions that we should be focused on, not how much more tax money can we raise. And that, unfortunately, has been sort of the measuring stick of success over the last decade, but I think voters are catching on and they're demanding much more than that.
And as you noted, how do you message this going into 2023? You've got 7 of 9 Seattle City Council seats that are going to be up for election. How do you make sure voters who have been very generous on these issues take this to heart?
Well, I think one, it's the facts are the facts that we've got resources in this city. This has been a wealthy city over the last decade, and the tax base has grown. The number of taxes imposed have been increased. We have a new business tax that didn't exist 3 years ago that's generating $300 million a year. So I think that's an important backdrop for the elections and the civic conversations we will be having. And I think voters, just as they did last year and have been doing, are going to be much more demanding of plans and specificity of how you are going to address these problems. And that's the conversation we should have in this city. It's a very smart and well-educated city and smart and well-educated electorate. And I don't think it satisfies and suffices anymore just to sort of hold yourself out there as a candidate and say, this is my philosophy or ideology or my political identity. Voters really want to understand, well, how are you going to get it done? What's the plan? What are your details and by when? And those are the same set of questions that business leaders and small business owners and others are asking. And so I think that is going to be a big part of the conversation, or at least should be, as we look to the 2023 city council elections. How are you going to get it done and by when?
John, I'd be remiss if I did not ask you about the recent announcement from Amazon that there are going to be some layoffs. Some people see that as an indicator of, you know, broader issues with the economy. Can you react to that news?
Yeah, we're clearly facing, you know, some amount of economic uncertainty here within our own community, certainly nationally. So to me, that means we should get everything we can out of every city dollar we have. And it means that we should be incredibly focused and effective and strategic about how we're spending dollars to get the outcome and deliver the results that voters expect. And the city has a significant amount of resource to do that because voters have been generous over the last decade in imposing new taxes on themselves. And because the city 2 years ago adopted a new tax on business. So even with that economic uncertainty, this city will collect more money than ever before, a record amount of tax revenue. So lack of money is not a reason for lack of progress and results. I think lack of focus and lack of the right strategies have been. And so that's where we need to focus if we want to help more folks in need, if we want to create safer communities throughout Seattle. And if we focus on getting our neighborhood business districts and downtown going again, that's how we're going to bring more resources to bear to address these issues.
The preceding segment was brought to you in partnership with Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So we talked earlier about this kind of Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis, beef or whatever. Well, there was something that happened on television, Paramount Plus to be specific, that I can't even wrap my mind around why anyone would think that this was acceptable or wouldn't open them up to lawsuits. So there's a show on Paramount Plus. All I watch on Paramount Plus is Yellowstone, but apparently they also have a show called The Good Fight. And in it, there is a character, again, this is a fictional character, who levies a very serious accusation against a very real person. So in the clip I'm about to play for you, again, from the show The Good Fight, you have a fictional character who's talking about being sexually assaulted by someone you may be familiar with.
This is my vetting?
Yes.
I have 267 days sodomy free.
Can we get to the assault?
Yes. I offered my political services to Governor DeSantis. He saw me in my bicycle shorts, worn purely for medical reasons. And he invited me onto his staff. Little did I know what he meant by staff.
Oh, my God.
God, yes, Diane. That's who I pray to for guidance on this decision, as well as my close friend and mentor, Roger Stone, who informed me that a demonic portal has opened up over the Florida state capitol. I didn't believe him, and I took the job. And this is where it gets more, shall we say, ribald. Ron invited me to CPAC so I could work on his speech. And then, and there, he drugged me and forced me into oral sex.
Do you have any witnesses?
No, I have better. I have a stain.
I mean, are you kidding me? So I used to watch Law & Order SVU all the time, and they'd have episodes where I'm like, okay, that way too closely mirrors reality. But they have that little disclaimer at the beginning. It says, like, you know, the persons or you might see do not reflect any actual events or whatever. But you kind of can tell sometimes. But they don't use flat out real names of people. In this, you've got a guy, an actor, claiming that after CPAC, Ron DeSantis sexually assaulted him and left a stain on his clothing. And this isn't a TV show. I mean, Ron DeSantis has to sue over that, right? That's crazy. Now, it turns out that later in the episode, this actor, you know, the plot shows that he was making it up to help Donald Trump.
What hotel?
The Sheraton.
Well, unfortunately, the governor changed hotels at the last minute. He was staying at the Hyatt.
Yeah, that one.
Okay. Thanks for your help, Mr. Staples.
Wait, what's wrong? You just tell me what hotel you want it to be.
No, this is the number of Russell Gardner and Associates. Please, go tell them your story.
What are you talking about? Ron DeSantis is going to win unless you use this.
A lie?
Yes, a lie. What does it matter? You want this because you hate DeSantis. I want this because it puts Trump ahead in the polling. Win-win.
Well, this has been a waste of a day.
Paramount Plus is owned by CBS. And, I mean, couldn't this, like, hurt your FCC license or something? There's no reason. I'm trying to think, like, well, maybe they just wanted it. They you know, ran it by their attorneys, were able to get away with it because the plot line showed it was this guy who was lying and Ron DeSantis didn't do this. But it just seems like an obvious lawsuit that would be easy to win if you could prove malice. But you also, why? Why do you need, I haven't watched this show, so I don't really know the larger plot line, but why do you need to levy an accusation that gross against a real politician who just ran for re-election and is expected to run for president? I don't, maybe they just wanted attention for the show. Maybe the ratings are flailing and Paramount Plus is desperate because it can't survive on Yellowstone alone. I don't know. But that is just crazy that this would be acceptable. Can you imagine, just imagine for a second, that something like that had happened about Barack Obama, where a fictional TV series used his claim saying he sexually assaulted some dude. Can you even imagine the anger that would result from something like that? The blowback in Hollywood? It would be insane. And yet I was looking online and I see like Breitbart did it, Fox News did it. I mean, there was a couple other folks that picked it up, but this is, I mean, come on, that is egregious. So I hope Ron DeSantis sues. I hope he wins, because that is just one of the more bizarre things I've seen in a long time. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Remember, if you want to hear the rest of that Julie Anderson interview, we'll have that for you on the subscriber-only show on Wednesday. Really enjoyed our conversation and having a chance to sit down with her and kind of pick her brain about everything that happened. And we'll be doing more of these in-studio interviews. You know, we're still kind of fine-tuning things here, getting used to it, but I think it's a really great step toward improving the podcast and ultimately improving the content. That's what matters. We want the best possible interviews for you. And I think part of that is having people, you know, sit down face to face and have conversations. So again, if you'd like to catch the rest of that interview on Wednesday, you can sign up at patreon.com/undivided for as little as $5. Or you can become a contributor on my locals community, brandycruz.locals.com. I will see all of you subscribers on Wednesday.